We're back with Community Voices. This is Pam Wiley with Larry Warren, and we are pleased to have on the line with us Dr. Bernie Krause. He is both a musician and a naturalist, and he has a new book out, The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. Well, Bernie, you have come on such a journey. You breathed music as a youngster studying the violin at age 3 1/2 and composition at age 4. And then you became a studio guitarist. And then in the early 60s, you joined the Weavers, the folk group, replacing Pete Seeger himself.
No less than Pete Seeger.
Pete Seeger,
well,
the man.
Pam, hold on a second. One never replaces Pete
Seeger.
Indeed.
He just filled the hole momentarily.
Oh, my gosh.
Indeed. You know, I was at a bar where Pete Seeger was in Salt Lake here, and we were at a joint appearance, and he got the whole bar dancing.
Yeah.
And
absolutely amazing.
And he was the life of the party, and my gosh, he was at least 75 then.
You should see him do it when he's in his 90s. He's still doing it.
What a man.
Amazing.
What a man. And then after you replaced the grand man of folk singing himself, well, not replaced, but okay. Then you performed electronic music with the Birds, the Doors, George Harrison, Stevie Wonder. And how can you perform with bigger names than that except by playing with and listening to the world itself? So tell us how you got into doing soundscapes.
Well, after my late music partner, Paul Beaver, and I got together, we had a contract with Warner Brothers, and our first album was an album called In a Wild Sanctuary, and it was the first album in the late 1960s. It was the first album ever to use ecology as a theme. And part of the process was recording natural soundscapes, because we thought if we could record natural soundscapes, we could use them as a component of orchestration, which also had never been done before. So I went out into the field to record, because Paul didn't want to do that. And when I switched on the recorder for the first time in a place called Muir Woods, north of San Francisco.
I know it will.
Stream. Do you know where it is?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really a beautiful place. And when I switched on the recorder and heard the sounds of the stream for the first time through these headphones, it changed my life. I mean, I felt so calm and I felt so relaxed. And it opened up space for me in a way that I'd never heard before. I decided right then and there, this was the fall of 1968, I decided right then and there that somehow or other I had to figure out a way to do that the rest of my life. I didn't know what I was going to do or how I was going to do it. So 10 years went by. Paul died of a brain hemorrhage during a concert that we were giving in L.A., and in 1979, I just finished working on Apocalypse Now, doing a lot of the sound effects and the score for it. And I just decided I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't want to live inside a studio or inside an office and be constrained by four walls. So I went back to school. I got my Ph.D. in bioacoustics. Bio meaning life and acoustic sound, so sounds of living organisms. And I've been doing that ever since.
Now, you say your interest stemmed from the 60s, and you've collaborated with the big names in rock, certainly. At some point, did you incorporate natural sounds into traditional mainstream music?
Not really. And the reason I didn't do that, Larry, was because I didn't think that there was any relationship between Western music and natural sound. And I thought that it was a dissonance, and they conflicted with one another. Part of that was because when I was working in the field in Borneo or Africa or in Indonesia and Latin America, what I found was with groups that live much more closely to the natural world than we do. They live in the forest. They live off the forest. When they broke into song, the way that they were singing and the way that they were influenced to break into song was because of the sound of the forest. And I couldn't figure that out for a long time. And finally, I figured out the that the sound, number one, was structured like music. It had melody, rhythm, and harmony, and also a structure to it. And that what they were imitating, they were imitating these sounds and these structures. And they were using the sounds of the forest as, get this, kind of a backup band, the natural karaoke orchestra with which they performed.
That's outstanding.
And it's absolutely outstanding because this music that we used to call primitives, because of course we know better, we learn our music at Juilliard and Eastman and all the fancy places, so we know our music, right? Well, these people that do this kind of music and still perform this kind of music have no ego. They're not musicians. They're not composers. They're not conductors. They just live naturally and in harmony with the natural world. And part of that is their acoustic expression, music, which they are absolutely connected to that background sound that they are surrounded with all the time.
They're part of the orchestra.
They're part of the orchestra, and the orchestra is part of them. They're not separate from nature.
Now you've been traveling the world recording these natural sounds from your human musician's standpoint. Are they all beautiful sounds to you, or is there a genus of critters out there who are more melodic? I mean, I think of obviously songbirds. I mean, is that one of the more pleasant things to record and listen to,
as opposed to crows?
Well, Larry, it's interesting you bring that up. Why take these creatures out of context of
right.
the natural soundscape?
Indeed.
For instance, why take the songbirds out of why isolate songbirds in relation to other birds in the same environment? Why take the whole bird species families and take them out of context of the insects and the frogs that are there and the mammals that are there that are wild, still wild? All of these things were questions that I brought up during the course of my work. And, you know, this is the collective voice that is animal voices that come from the habitats that we once lived in. These are the things that are really important. And these are things that create a narrative to tell us how we're doing in the world, and how we're treating it. How is the world surviving with our based on our impact?
So
all of these things are expressed through the natural soundscape, through the biophony.
It's the collective voice, hence the orchestra.
Yeah.
And you start the book with a chapter called Echoes of the Past. And your writing makes us wish we could have heard the, as you say, the tweeting, clucking, humming, clicking, moaning, howling, screaming, peeping, sighing, whistling of a time 16,000 years ago of animals now extinct. So
yes.
What kind of animals existed here in North America just before mankind came?
That's the list of animals that existed before mankind came 16,000 years ago. You just read it.
The giant armadillo.
Uh-huh.
The American cheetah, saber-toothed tiger, the giant beaver, the sloth that stands 14 feet high on its hind feet. And I was in a cave in, it was some kind of cavern in New Mexico, I think, where you were able to see the scratchings of this sloth that had fallen into the cave and
right.
couldn't get out. And
right.
the claw marks were way up, like 20 feet up.
Well, if you'd have been around to listen to those, you'd have had to worry about getting killed by them. Anyway.
Yeah, really, really. See, sloth does kill.
But what's interesting about the point that you're beginning to make here is that I've been recording now for 44 years, and I've been recording soundscapes rather than single individual critters out of context. And the reason I did that is because I thought that there was more information there. And indeed, what I have in my archive is a collection of soundscapes from around the world. And 50% of my archive is from habitats that no longer exist or are completely silent.
Wow.
Wow.
Just in your lifetime of recording.
In my 44 years of recording natural soundscapes, 50% of that library is now from extinct habitats.
Wow. So this has great value, the archive, in recapturing a past that we may never hear again.
Absolutely. And we're looking for a home for that archive, by the way.
Interesting. Well, I think I don't think we're the home, but boy, yeah, that's a treasured resource. You know, let me just, Bernie, tell you a quick personal story. We have a family cabin in northern Minnesota, and on a full moon night, I woke up about 3 a.m, and every critter of the forest was croaking, chirping, howling, whatever, and I just started laughing to myself at the cacophony of sound that was all happening at 3 a.m. that the rest of the world was sleeping through. In fact, I woke up my wife, which is always dangerous at 3 a.m. but I said, just sit up and listen to this. And we must have sat up for an hour just laughing at the racket. And we were wondering how we'd ever get back to sleep because the full moon just set everybody off, it seemed. So this is the kind of symphony you've been gathering for decades.
Well, absolutely. And you know something? There's another thing that you can add to that, Larry. If you had gotten up at like 1 or 12 o'clock midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, you would have begun to hear over time the whole evolutionary structure of life on Earth. First of all, you would have heard the insect come in. Then you would have heard the reptiles and the amphibians, followed by the birds, followed by the mammals. They would have entered into the chorus in exactly that order, evolutionary order. It's absolutely remarkable.
Oh, my gosh.
And that holds true no matter whether you're recording in Borneo or Minnesota?
Pretty much.
I remember recording in Kenya, waking up in the middle of the night and listening to that, and I just had to record it. The insects, the tree frogs, the whole thing, it was magnificent.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Do you think people have just plain moved too far away from nature?
Well, you know, we've not only moved too far from nature, but we're messing around with it.
Yeah.
You know, Aldo Leopold, a wonderful ecologist from the 1940s, said, if you decide to tamper with nature, you better keep all the parts.
Oh, my gosh, what a great observation.
Isn't that neat? I would add one other thing. You want to keep the schematics and the building plans, too.
Yeah. And doesn't it just kind of get your head straightened out just to listen to the animal orchestra?
Sure, it's the thing that calms us. Snowmobiles don't calm us. Straight piping motorcycles don't calm us. ORVs don't calm us. The water vehicles don't do that because they make a lot of noise. We like to make a lot of noise, but that's what stresses us. That's what causes us anxiety.
So
listen to natural sounds, and the whole thing, your whole world changes.
So maybe a quieter life leads to a kinder and gentler life.
Absolutely. And there's another thing. A student of mine finally was listening to this stuff, and she said, this might be our last chance to hear the voice of the divine.
I like that. You're listening to what really matters.
Exactly right.
Now, have you found over time, I'm sure you have, that you have to get further and further into wild places to escape human noise?
Absolutely. And Larry, that brings up another thing. When I first started, it used to take me like 20 hours to record an hour of usable material. That was 1968. Now it takes me almost 2,000 hours to get the same thing. It's almost a year of recording.
Wow. Yeah. To edit out all the human sounds.
Yeah.
Do you have any sounds on hand that you'd want us to hear?
Okay, here's this recording of a beaver crying. And why is this beaver crying? Well, a friend of mine was recording, recording at a lake in Minnesota, a remote lake that he'd been recording at for many, many years. And 3 years ago, he was recording during the day, and this lake was formed by this beaver dam at the outlet, and it had created an entire environment that was quite beautiful, and he recorded there, like I say, every year for many. And 3 years ago, a couple of fish and wildlife guys came in and dropped a stick of dynamite down the beaver dam and blew up the dam in the spring, killing the female and the pups. And, you know, we'd always been told that animals don't have emotion and don't feel pain or anything like that, you know, that old Cartesian idea. Well, this beaver, the male survived, but wounded. And I'd never heard any sound of a beaver before other than the tail slap and a few grunts. But this animal was recorded swimming in circles around this pond looking for its mate and pups and crying out in the saddest sounds I've ever heard in my life. Forget music or anything like that. This will really tear your heart out.
Okay, now let's think of a cheerier one. I don't want to go out on a crying beaver.
Larry, that's the best I've got. That's the joke.
Yeah.
I was listening to what you have on Facebook, and the water sounds. Water's not. It's part of the orchestra. And it's certainly not animal, but it was just so wonderful just to hear the crashing waves.
Now, in the natural world, are you recording sounds only above the surface of the earth, or are you going out into the ocean as well?
Well, you know, we record a lot in the ocean. We record whales and seals and fish and shrimp. All kinds of things make noise. Every living organism on the planet makes noise. And one time I was leading this trip to Alaska, this is really the most unusual sound I've got. I was recording in Alaska, and I had this group with me that I was kind of showing how to record in the wild. And we dropped a hydrophone down the mouth part of an anemone in a little tide pool where we were camping. And the anemone, if you can imagine the little thing, it just kind of encircled the hydrophone, brought it down into its stomach, and encircled the hydrophone with its tentacles and was looking for something of nutritional value. And when it didn't find something of nutritional value, it expelled the hydrophone, and this is what it sounded like.
And it's that's it with a, well, excuse me, or is that a...
No, it goes...
Or is that a, oh, that's just my anemone.
Yeah, it's the anemone. And nobody, and kids love that, of course.
They gravitate
to the scatological.
I'll bet they do. Well, yours has been a grand journey with a grand muse, life itself. And thank you for recording the music of our planet. And as your friend Pete Seeger says on the back cover of your book, Krauss shows us the music of the natural world. Long may his work continue. Thank you, Bernie Krauss, author of The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music.
Interesting talk, Bernie. Thanks very much. And the book is quite amusing and revealing as well.
Thanks.